On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we recap the final week of the regular season, try and make sense of this American League here in 2025 with three games to go. Look ahead to the weekend, the series that mean the most in both leagues. What spots are still up for grabs? The Mariners won the division? Oh my goodness, Cal Raleigh has how many home runs? We talk about ABS, even though it's not coming till next year. Give you the good, the bad, the ugly, and a little bit more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can't believe the Tigers won a game. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And in the season of the improbable, the impossible has happened.
This has been quite the week. This is a two-podcast week due to our scheduling, due to Rosh Hashanah, due to me traveling for a wedding this weekend. And those 3 days where we did not podcast sure did give us, I mean, really 4 days, sure did give us a lot to talk about. And on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast, which we are recording late on Thursday evening Eastern time, the games in progress are not especially important from a playoff picture standpoint. They are important from a Cal Raleigh trying to hit more home runs standpoint. More on that shortly. But we're going to mostly just kind of just check in here. What has occurred these past few days? Where do we sit with the final weekend on deck? And then, of course, it's Friday. We'll give you the good, the bad, the ugly. Don't you worry.
On my honeymoon, which, as I'm sure you remember, Jordan, was very long and a great time, my wife and I would every day check in. You know? How are you? How are we? Right? Just checking in. Are we savoring this unique, lovely experience. Mm-hmm. And I feel that way right now with you and baseball.
I'm going to keep dragging out that comparison you just made, which is that, and as we're going to get to some of these results here and just how we're feeling about these standings with finally, you know, just a few games left. But the feeling that I've had as I've looked at these standings recently and trying to process what has occurred, certainly here in my backyard in the AL Central, is the most glaring and most dramatic example. But as we bring it back to your honeymoon example, as you mentioned, you're checking in every day. Really, in that case, too, knowing some of the ups and downs of your honeymoon, mostly ups for sure, but it's a long season. It was a long honeymoon.
Long season.
Right?
Long honeymoon.
And so there was a lot of time for things to happen that you thought, well, there's probably not enough time for this to happen. But indeed, here we are. And there has been just enough time for a whole lot of unexpected stuff to happen. So let's get into it. Our opener today is the American League Madness.
All right. So what has happened? What do we know? Well, not a lot over in the American League, which I'm going to be honest, I do this for a living. I forget which one's the senior circuit and which one's not. Okay, that's just something I don't know. I think that's okay. Maybe I'll look it up later and be more.
I believe the National League is considered. Wait, am I wrong? Yeah, see
look at us. You don't know either.
Oh, no, the American League is the junior circuit because the National League's the OG.
Okay, so, there you go.
Which is weird in my head because of the teams involved feel like they're the teams that are older. But anyway,
whatever.
This is a long time ago.
The only thing we know is that the Mariners won that American League West. That is the only thing that is decided. The Yankees have clinched a spot in the postseason, as have the Jays. And that's it, friends. That's it. Okay, so let's actually start with the Mariners, because they have won the AL West for the first time since 2001. Jordan Schusterman, you have cared deeply about the Seattle Mariners for some time. And so I just want you to take the listener inside this experience of the Mariners doing the damn thing.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, when you watch a celebration like that, by the way, this was, I think, fairly unique. Maybe there's some precedent to it. But, you know, we know teams tend to like to celebrate multiple times. We have clinched a postseason spot and then we have clinched a division. And we will see again whether the Blue Jays or Yankees end up clinching. That will occur. They will have a second one. This being in consecutive nights felt unique for Seattle. But for a franchise that has not done a lot of celebrating over the last 25 years, I think they were more than happy to pop bottles on consecutive evenings, clinching the berth on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday, last night, with two more Cal Raleigh home runs and beating up on the worst team in baseball, as they should, the Seattle Mariners have won the American League West. And I wrote about it today, and it's hard to really know where to begin when you have that much history and that much context. And yes, you know, I've been watching closely for whatever, 15 years or so, maybe a little bit less, but that's a fraction of what. There's so many different directions, because especially when you have so many tethers, you have the manager and Dan Wilson, who was on that team in 2001, right? You have, you know, the nine holder overs from the 2022 team, which both seems like a lot and seems like a little when you consider how much has happened, you know, since 2022. And so
it feels
there's
like
a lot
a little
of different
for Jerry DePoto.
Well, right. And so the front office and the coaching staff, except for the manager, is almost all the same, right? So that's another interesting thing, right? Scott Service obviously gone, but most of the coaches are still the same. And so many different directions you can go. Cal hitting those two more home runs ended up making him the focus of my story. But I also wrote about Ichiro and kind of his message to the Mariners during his number retirement ceremony, where he talked about how, like, yeah, like, I showed up in 2001 and I won MVP and Rookie of the Year and we won 116 games and we went to the ALCS, and I was like, all right, this is great. This is easy. And Ichiro never played in the postseason again for the Seattle Mariners. And of course, you have examples like Felix Hernandez, who is, of course, the reason I got interested in this team, who played his whole career in Seattle and never pitched in the postseason. So there's some pretty, you know, staggering you know, realities for this franchise. But the other part, which I didn't even end up harping on too much in my story, but I've been thinking about it a lot too, is it's not just about being back in the postseason. It is about winning the division, and specifically about taking down the Astros. And while we know that Houston is not the same team, we know that they are, we've talked about it, just totally debilitated by injuries, it is still a team with Jose Altuve and Framber Valdez and now Carlos Correa again and some really good players. And in this case, the Astros squandered a 7-game lead and the Mariners swept them in Houston when they needed to. And, you know, that's the other thing. When you think back to 2022, it's like, okay, great, we're in the playoffs. You know, they're feeling good. You'll get swept. The Astros win the World Series. The Astros won the division that year by 16 games. So it's not like you really felt like you were in the vicinity of winning a division. Last 2 years, they come closer. And then this year, they finally get it done, and Cal Raleigh being at the center of all of it is amazing for a million reasons, but that's obviously why he ended up being the focus once again writing about the Mariners.
I think this is true for like 10 franchises, 10 fan bases, where you watch the games and you expect bad things to happen, right? You anticipate disappointment. And I think that is true for the Mariners, a team that was not in the postseason from 2001 until 2022. And I think that is even more true with the Mariners in regards to the Astros, right? Where I'm sure it was, you know, heading into that series in Houston, the Mariners were cooking and the vibes were high, but it's still like, okay, here's the final boss, right? This is what we have to do. And they went out and they did it. And then their reward was getting to kick the Rockies to the curb. My question for you here has to do with Cal Raleigh. So Cal Raleigh is now up to 60 home runs. We could talk about the MVP debate until our faces turn purple. We're not going to do that. Just one thing. Cheer on your dude. Please don't pull down the other guy. That's all.
It's really easy to cheer on both of these guys. Like, I would just
keep
both the
great.
Focus on
There's
that.
No bad vote. There's no bad vote. Yeah. Yeah. My question for you, Jordan. If you caught home run number 62, you, Jordan Schusterman, you go for a walk, you're at the Mariners game, or 63, whatever, which one it is, what would you do? Mm. You're out there, you're like seeing what's going on in the stands. Let's say you're covering the game. Cal gets one.
That's a funny thought.
Lands in your lap.
Yeah. A media member catches it.
What are you doing? You just give it to him, you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it seems like a Mariners fan. I didn't see the name, but there's already been a story going around about the guy who caught 60, who immediately gave it to a kid, and the kid was whisked away to go meet up with Cal, and then look what you get. You get to meet Cal, too. That's a great example. It's like you get rewarded for your good deed. They still bring that guy back out here today.
I love the idea of you getting to meet Cal as someone who has interviewed Cal Raleigh like multiple times.
Yeah.
Cal's like, can't wait to meet the guy who caught the ball.
And he goes, what are you doing here? It's like, you were just asking me about Florida State football in Cleveland. Like, what's going on here?
You're like wearing your cred.
Yeah. It's like, wow, what are the odds? No, but I don't know. I mean, it's but now, again, we're talking about historical artifacts at this point, right? I mean, that's the thing. So this is a big deal. And we have this game still going on as we're recording, and we'll see how many more at-bats he gets tonight. They're going to play the Dodgers this weekend in a situation where the Dodgers, from what I can tell, don't have anything to play for. They are stuck in that wild card round. They cannot catch the Phillies for a bye, which means they are going to be in self-preservation mode. Now, the Dodgers half-assing better than the Rockies.
The Dodgers have been in self-preservation mode since they got home from Japan.
We'll get to the Dodgers later. But the point is there will be more opportunities for Cal to hit home runs and more specifically, and I think more importantly for this team, to get a few more wins and have a shot at the number one seed in the American League, because of course the Tigers have lost and lost and lost and lost and lost and lost, and the Blue Jays have fallen into a dead heat with the Yankees, which we'll get into here briefly. But yeah, so I mean, a golden opportunity for Seattle to kind of go in on into the postseason on their own terms. And we'll see what happens with Brian Wu. He would have been pitching today. They ended up scratching him, but it sounds like it's not as serious. You know, he had left with that pec injury against the Astros. So if they can line him, he's going to get more rest. He'll have that full extra week. And they'll have those home games, which again, right, 22, they have that one home game. It ends up being two games, and it's 18 innings of pain. But you'll have to assume that this time, especially with this offense and this lineup, I think they're going to be ready to go, whoever they end up playing and whether they're the one or the two.
Two last things. One is just the tiebreakers here. So the Mariners do not have the tiebreaker against either the Yankees or the Blue Jays. So if they do finish even, the Blue Jays / Yankees will get the leg up. The Mariners will enter this final weekend one game behind, but because of that tiebreaker, it is effectively two games. And then just the idea that the Mariners are the team that have this thing wrapped up heading into the last weekend, that they are assured, they are comfortable, they are the team in the American League with the least to play for, is, I'm sure for you and Mariners world, incredibly bizarre. And what do you do with your hands and your time and your eyeballs? And I am happy for all Mariners fans out there. You beautiful people very much earned it. All right, let's go from the West to the East. Here's the situation in the American League East. The Blue Jays had a bit of a rough week against the Boston Red Sox, I believe, dropping 2 out of 3 in that series to the Red Sox. Meanwhile, the New York Yankees are on a bit of a roll right now. Not a huge surprise considering their schedule has gotten quite soft all of a sudden with the White Sox in town. The Yankees had that really difficult stretch of competitive teams where they kind of battled through it and ended up with a solid record during those games. And they were rewarded with Orioles, White Sox, Orioles, and one more bad team that is slipping my mind. And now, with 3 games left, the Blue Jays and the Yankees have the exact same record. They are both 91 and 68. As we enter the final weekend of the season, the Blue Jays have this tiebreaker. Okay, so the Blue Jays, if these two teams are tied, the Blue Jays are the ones who will win the division. This weekend, the Jays are home against Tampa Bay, and the Yankees are home against the Orioles.
The Twins, they play the Twins, which is a nice thing to do in September. That's who the Yankees also have gotten to play recently as they have pushed their way up the standings. And yeah, I mean, Rays and Orioles aren't, you know, playing for anything here. The Yankees, I think both of these series are still at home, right, for both teams. So they'll have that going for them. But yeah, this is, I think looking at the schedule, we sort of saw this coming, as you mentioned. And the way the Blue Jays were kind of playing those last couple days, some ugly stuff, some terrible umpiring for sure. But John Schneider getting out there and being like, listen, this is not a conspiracy against us. We are doing dumb stuff and we need to figure it out. They Love figured it. It out tonight. They look great tonight. And that was a good way to kind of bounce back. Because, yeah, otherwise, I mean, yeah. At this point, when we're dealing with so few games, that's a huge win to just eat. I know they're tied here, but that's a huge deal to avoid getting swept by Boston there. And it does, I think Toronto has to feel a little bit better, especially with the pitchers, because they will have
the
Bieber, Yesavage, Gossman going, whereas the Yankees will have Will Warren, Cam Schlittler, and Luis Gil.
So the Achilles heel this week for the Blue Jays has been their starting pitching, yeah. Where Max Scherzer, I mean, that is not fun for anybody. Today not they great. Won going Louis Varland to Eric Lauer. You know, they really at this point with Jose Berríos going to the bullpen and then the IL, really have like three reliable starting pitchers, and they're all going this weekend. And that is Bieber, Yesavage, and Gossman. I think is Yesavage reliable? He's like 12 years old. He just got here. Who knows? He's freaking nasty. That's for sure. I think I would, my prediction for this weekend is that these two teams both take 2 out of 3. They finish with the same record. Blue Jays get the tiebreaker.
The other thing to mention about, and I don't know Bassett's status, so that's kind of important. The two Blue Jays things I just wanted to mention is Santander is back. So
great.
I mean, listen, I don't know what to expect either, but like that dude's one of the highest paid players on their team. And like, if he suddenly shows up and hits a big home run this weekend, that's a big deal. So that's okay. One to monitor. And then just the possibility of them deciding whether to give the ball to Yesavage versus Scherzer is fascinating. I mean, in a playoff series, like that is a really, really interesting situation that they may be facing soon. And Scherzer, who has like a historically bad ERA in the first inning, he seems to be healthy, but that's another thing you never know. It's very much week to week with him. So it might just be like, yeah, Scherzer's hurt. So I'm sorry, we're going Yesavage, but Yesavage was in freaking A-ball to start the season, man. It's a lot to ask of that guy.
Trey Yesavage was born on July 28th, 2003. Max Scherzer was drafted out of high school. He did not sign.
Right.
He went to Mizzou.
Yep.
But he was drafted out of high school in June of 2003. And the Blue Jays will have to pick which of those two people to have pitch. Quickly on the Yankees, they're rolling right now. I mean, they are purring. This is the best they've looked in a long time. It's not surprising. They should be beating all these teams. It's good that they are beating all these teams. They definitely have the mojo back. I'm sure Yankees fans, some of them are like making us believe before, you know, we haven't seen the Yankees look horrible in a while. They're still capable of that, I'm sure. Whether they win the World Series or not, like they're going to have a game in the playoffs where, you know.
Of course. And I think Yankees fans, once
they
get
them in, they'll know.
Like Yankees fans will know, like, we're bracing for that. But
I think it'll happen on Friday night. I think Friday night, Trevor Rogers, the GOAT, in Yankee Stadium, he's going to shove. Will Warren going to get clapped by the Orioles. The Jays will win that game on Friday night to go up by a game. And then the Yankees will win the last two. Jays will drop the Yesavage game, and then they'll win on Sunday. That's how I think this plays.
All right. I admire you saying you think you know what's going to happen. I'll say this, though. Just the premise, and this is why this weekend is so exciting, that we could get to Sunday, and one of these teams is going to have to play 2 days later and one of them isn't. And so just the stakes, if we get to Sunday and still don't know somehow, is thrilling and why we're amped up for this weekend. So quickly on Boston, before we talk about the Guardians and Tigers, which, hello, That's the real real headliner this week. Boston, as we mentioned, you know, wins the series in Toronto. They are very likely.
They're just like on their own here. They're their own thing.
However, they have the Tigers coming to town this weekend. In the scenario where the Tigers remember how to win baseball games and GMAC Cash can play Tigers one again for the next 3 days, now we have something interesting, because in that scenario, I believe the Tigers would pass Boston
45. The Tigers at present.
Oh, they're only one game back. Oh,
are
boy.
Only one game back of Boston. So just to review, everybody. So the Yankees or the Blue Jays, whoever doesn't win the division, they're locked into that top wildcard spot. Okay. Forget about the four seed, effectively. The Red Sox are then one game up on the Tigers, who are then one game up on the Astros. The Red Sox, however, lost all three games to the Tigers earlier this season. If the Tigers win any of these three games, they will have the tiebreaker. So if the Tigers take two out of three this weekend in Boston, they will leap Boston. Forget about the Guardians, really. Like, if the Tigers win two out of three in Boston, they will leap Boston and move into the five seed.
But if the Guardians lose a series at home against the Rangers, then the Tigers would leap the Guardians. And now Guardians in Boston, who has that tiebreaker? Again, now we're getting into the goofy stuff, let alone Houston.
This is nuts, dude.
This is a headache. We're three games to go, and we're like these four things can still change. And so now let's get back to Cleveland, okay, as we wrap up this American League attempt at a recap before we go into this weekend, which is that Cleveland, by winning one game against Detroit this week, I mean, they won two, but by winning one, they clinched the tiebreaker with the Tigers, which means if they finish tied as they do now, the Guardians will win the AL Central, which would push Detroit into this mess with Houston and Boston.
And so the math for Cleveland is simple. Equal or best the Tigers win total this weekend,
AL
and
Central
they win the division. Yep.
Yeah. Which again is historic. 15 and a half games back at the beginning of July. 11 earlier this month, and now here we are. And being in the building for, I mean, again, we don't have time because we have plenty more to get to. I mean, I could go 20 minutes on this Tuesday game.
How was it?
This Tarek Skubal
inning.
We got to
talk about Skubal's shotgun.
Yeah, Skubal's I mean, this was preposterous, and I wrote off that game and just zeroed in on Skubal because it was an epic meltdown. Individuals, some of which was his fault, some of which was bad circumstance, some of which was guards ball nonsense. Of course, mixed in is a horrific moment where David Fry gets hit in the face with 99 miles an hour and sustains multiple facial fractures, and he's out.
Skubal goes and visits him in the hospital.
Skubal not only goes and visits him, you know how he got there?
Stephen Vogt drove him.
Stephen Vogt gave him a ride. So Gardo's there's a lot. Yeah. So that's an incredible story. And Skubal,
can I talk about that inning quickly?
So please. I mean, it's
this Tigers meltdown before that did not have an enduring image. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There were moments like there was the Braves scoring two in the ninth off of bulletproof vest. But like there was no that. Is the picture they'll show, okay? And this inning, if the Tigers do crumble and the Astros, who are only one game behind them, leap the Tigers into the playoffs, or even if the Tigers make the playoffs and lose in the wildcard round, this season, the lasting image will be, unfortunately so, Tarek Skubal long snapping a baseball over the first baseman's head down the right field line. And that is not fair because Tarek Skubal is the reason the Tigers are even here to begin with. He has not really done anything wrong. He will win the Cy Young. It will probably be unanimous. But that moment of him and just yeeting that thing through his legs for absolutely no reason.
Yeah,
that's what we'll remember, dude. And part of me is saddened by that because I like Tarek Skubal and it sucks that it'll be him. But for the best player on that team to do something so inexplicable and bizarre and memorable. I mean, that was it, dude. That was it. What was that like for you? And what was that like in the building?
Well, like the whole inning,
when you see him like
just
go to bend down.
Yeah, right. Well, again, it's so loud. I mean, the crowd was awesome. And when you have, especially against Scooble, you know, you have any base runner, you're excited. You get these back-to-back bunts. But that moment, you know, any error is just a thrilling moment for a home crowd, right? But this one was so unusual and just like, well, that's not what you're expecting. I mean, whatever. It's one thing to turn around and chuck the ball down the line like a normal PFP screw up. And that's what he was essentially trying to avoid, is doing that. That was Hinch's explanation, but he went for the emergency flip. I will say, after watching it later, like when I wrote about it in my head, it was a lot. It was like basically no chance of him making the play. He had time. Like it's not an easy play for a lefty pitcher to make. Like it is not. It's a tough play, like indisputably. So I'm not saying like he 100,000% should have made it. But if you look at where he is when he decides to hut hike, yep, he's got time to turn around and throw the ball like a normal person. And he doesn't do that. And it was dog, amazing. So I just, yeah. But anyway, you can go see, read, I, you know, wrote 2,000 words about it. So you can go see that. But
it was basically if I said to you, if I like went to, you know, frickin' ChatGPT, right? And I said, what is the most narrative, you know, driven, fitting way for this Guardians Tigers thing to go? You'd be like, well, no ball leaves the infield off Tarik Skubal and he hot hikes went down the, like, it was, it was nuts how like storybook upside downy it was. I still can't believe I saw that from afar. I can only imagine what it was in person. Okay, before we take a quick break, like we should just say the Houston Astros.
I mean, listen,
like the Houston Astros are the team right now. Like, even though what the Tigers have done is more embarrassing, and the Astros have had so many injuries that it is like they deserve blame and scorn and ridicule to an extent, right? But like them being the team on the outside, when you look at the players, is not that shocking. However, they lost two this week in Sacramento, which is that can't happen. Now, they took the last one today to avoid the sweep. But if they had just gotten one more, they would be tied in that final spot. And that's a big deal, dude.
It's a big deal. They are going to Anaheim to play a team that is worse than the A's, and that is the Angels. But, yes. And I mean, how it went, you know, in against the Yolo A's is kind of what I expected could happen. But you had Fromber and Hunter Brown going. Like, you had Hunter Brown going. Hunter Brown lost. Like, that's tough at this point in the season. Can't really afford that. So, yeah, this is a massive deal, though, right? When we talk all the machinations of this, the Houston Astros have been in the postseason every year since 2016. And so them missing it, no matter how we got here and whether or not they deserve scorn for blowing the lead under all these circumstances and all these injuries, the Houston Astros not being in the postseason is a massively important and just like a moment. This is a moment in time that we have now reached with many weird circumstances, but it is significant. In a year that they bring Carlos Correa back.
And they endure so much. The fact that this team is even here is impressive, and no listeners are going to be like,
for sure,
good for Houston. The Astros could be done tomorrow night. They're one game back in the wild card. They have the tiebreaker against nobody, not even you, the listener. Okay? So if they lose tomorrow night and the Tigers win tomorrow night, they'll be two back with two to go and no way to overcome it. And it feels like the end of an era, and it's bizarre, and it's no fault but their own. That's the American League, I guess. Any further questions, Your Honor? Probably. We'll talk on Monday, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll just say I'm traveling this weekend, so I will not be here for Cleveland for them to potentially win the division in historic fashion, but I don't know, because Detroit winning today meant it's the margins are so thin here, because when you wake up this morning, it's like, oh, this is it. Guardians are going to sweep. It's over. They're going to do this. It's amazing. And then as soon as Detroit wins, it's like, wait a minute. It's still right there for both teams. So we will see how it goes. All right, we'll take a break when we return to the National League.
welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. That was the older circuit. It's the younger circuit, and now it's time for the circuit. Circuit City, here we go. Here's the deal with the National League. It's a lot more solidified than the American League. The Milwaukee Brewers have won the National League Central, and they will probably be the number one seed. Okay? They have a two-game advantage over the Philadelphia Phillies and the tiebreaker. So their magic number is one. Okay? So if they win a game or the Phillies lose a game, the Brewers are going to be the one seed. The Phillies have already clinched. They have already clinched that two seed at the very worst. Okay, they have gotten that over the Dodgers, and the Dodgers have gotten the three. They have won the NL West. Those three things are set. They are done. They are dusted. The four seed, the Chicago Cubs. Okay, Chicago Cubs are in the four. They have a two-game advantage in that spot over the San Diego Padres. However, as far as I can tell, the San Diego Padres have the tiebreaker over the Cubs. They're two games back. Feels unlikely, but it's still possible. As far as my tiny little pea brain is concerned, Jordan, the top five teams are set. And that leaves us with a mess down at the bottom. Today, the Cincinnati Reds salvaged the finale against the Pittsburgh Pirates at home. They dropped the first two. I believe we woke up on Monday with them in a playoff spot. The Correct. Reds were in a playoff Correct. Spot. The Mets were going to Chicago. The Reds were home against the Pirates. The Diamondbacks, who at the time were only one game back as well, they were home against the Dodgers. The Diamondbacks at home and the Reds at home both lost two out of three. The Reds ones were just gut churning, particularly the middle game, which they lost in extra innings somehow. Paul Skeens, dominant for Pittsburgh. Reds keep it close until he's gone. Noelvi Marte hits an inside the park home run. Tyler Stevenson ties it with a homer in the ninth. And then like the Pirates win anyway in 11. And it's like, come on, Reds. What are we doing? The Mets, okay? Then the Reds win today. Unreal catch, home run robbery, Noelvi Marte to keep that game 2-1. And they stay alive with that win. The Mets, like, what an invigorating victory they have on Tuesday night. Coming back, going down early against the Cubs and Francisco Alvarez, who, like, I think a friend of the program, Tony DiComo, wrote this. It might have been Tim Britton or Will Salmon over The Athletic. The Mets needed a dude with some sauce, with some grit, with some guts. A dude with the words, the best, tattooed on his neck. Okay? Francisco Alvarez is playing through just an avalanche of injuries right now. And for him to have that moment was just sensational stuff. Huge home run in that Tuesday game. And then Wednesday, Jonah Tong, he pees his pants again. He can't make it out of the third inning. Allows five runs, records six outs. Cubs win that game. And then tonight, Mets bounce back, win that series, giving themselves a slim, razor-thin one-game advantage in the NL wild card heading into the final weekend. As it stands, they are one game above Cincy. Cincy is one game above Arizona. Arizona is the team that is really looking rough here because they do not have the tiebreaker over the Reds. So they would need to sweep and the Reds would need to get swept in order for them to leap the Reds.
Yeah, I mean, the Diamondbacks are really getting down to the end here. Again, amazing they're still in it at all. But they will need to sweep the Padres, basically, to stay alive. And they need the Mets to lose. But we have the Diamondbacks in San Diego. We have the Reds at Milwaukee, who, as we mentioned, don't really have a whole lot to play for. The Mets in Miami. And the Cubs hosting the Cardinals. Now, the Mets have a tough draw here as the Marlins inexplicably have arrived here. Though they are finally eliminated, They are still going to throw their three best pitchers, Sandy Alcantara, Eury Pérez, and Edward Cabrera. Cabrera coming back from injury wasn't great in his last outing, but Sandy's been looking pretty damn good in the second half. Eury Pérez, of course, very talented. And we know the Mets pitching isn't exactly anything special. So while the Mets do have this one game lead going into the weekend, they are going to have to earn it. I don't think they should feel too comfortable here. The Marlins have been playing well enough that there is definitely a twist here. However, this is going to be more about the Reds showing up. We're coming off. They mopped the Cubs and we're like, finally. And then you lose the series at home to the Pirates. 3-12 this year in extra innings. That's hard to do with the Ghost Runner. So that's pretty tough.
That's
not a trend you would like to see. And they will certainly
they are regret that if they end up missing the postseason. 3-7 this year against the Brewers.
Okay. So that's, I guess, not as bad. But anyway, we'll see exactly how, you know, foot on the gas the Brewers are. I doubt it'll be much, although I guess the Phillies, they're playing the Twins. So the Phillies might be able to sleepwalk to a sweep, and in which case maybe we have a late breaking, you know, change here, but it seems unlikely. And it does look like it'll be Milwaukee one. And
so, just for review,
too. Yep. I have one more Mets, topic on the National League before we move on, but yeah.
The Mets need to keep pace with the Reds. They need to match or surpass whatever the Reds do. The Reds need to find a game somewhere, right? The Mets somehow control their own destiny. Somehow. We have gotten here. And they are, I cannot believe it. They have so thoroughly underwhelmed and disappointed. Their pitching staff is being held together with string and duct tape. And yet, they just win more games this weekend than the Cincinnati Reds. They get to go to the playoffs.
Sure. Hopefully, that's not too much to ask. We are going to talk about ABS in a second, but let's just quickly acknowledge the Dodgers, who have won the National League West for the 90 millionth year in a row, except for that one time where the Giants won 107 games. Hats off, man. Like, I watched the Dodgers get whooped in Pittsburgh, and I said, uh-oh, don't love this. They're not looking very good. You were even more harsh on them. You were talking about how insulted you were at the degree to which they have just kind of coasted in the regular season. And I think a lot of that was valid, but I also think that they still ended up getting it done. They did manage to win the division again, which is not a small thing. But they are going to be subject to this wild card round. And that, my friends, is going to be very compelling. Now, they are coming in pretty healthy. They got Roki in the bullpen. And that's important, as not just because we disagreed about it and I look forward to being right, but more importantly, because the Dodgers bullpen has been continuously catastrophically bad. Now, I know they managed to squeak out an extra innings victory over Arizona this week, which was very impressive. Shout out Justin Robleski. But they got way more guys pitching poorly in the bullpen right now than pitching well. And that's why I think there's an opening for Roki. He looked very good in his return. Do I think he's going to be closing games? Still probably not, but maybe. I don't know, man. He's throwing a sinker. The splitter looks great. He's throwing 99. It's in short stints. With the standard of this current Dodgers bullpen, I think he's got a shot. So we will see how they arrange their pitching over the next couple of days, which we will start to get an understanding of what the plan is for these wild card games, because they got a lot of arms at their disposal. Is it going to be Ohtani in game one? Is it going to be Yamamoto in game one? Is it going to be Blake Snell, who's been generally awesome recently? Like, here we are. They have all these pitchers, and now it's in a shorter series. So this could go in a lot of different directions. Will Kershaw even be on the roster? There's so many questions with this pitching staff, as we knew when we are finally here. And it seems like it's interesting because on one hand, they will get to line it up, but it will be for this short, chaotic series and not with a week of rest for the DS.
So the Dodgers have been in the playoffs every year since 2013, right? The first year there was a wild card game was 2012, right? So the Dodgers era basically coincides with the wild card game era, right? Now, we moved to the wild card round a couple of years ago, yes. The Dodgers have only played in the wild card round game one time over that span.
St. Louis, right?
Against St. Louis in 2021. Yeah. Now, again, it's because they've won the division all these times, right? And usually when you win the division, you get the bye. You don't have to deal with that. And I remember thinking about it at the time because, remember, they won 106 games that year. They had the second best record in baseball. It was like, they have to go to the wild card game? Does it feel like they're not above this? Right? Because the Dodgers are this enormous thing. And I'm not saying they have entitlement. And they won on a walk-off homer. Like, it was close. Like, Chris Taylor had to take Alex Reyes to do it. And there's a sense of entitlement in my mind. It's like, the Dodgers have to do the wild card round? Like, ooh, like, we have to do that? Like, we have to play in those games? And, like, the randomness of it. Like, don't forget the randomness of it. I know they had to do it in 2020 when everyone had to do it, right? They kicked the crap out of the Brewers. But this is – we've really never seen this, what we're about to see.
And adding to that, their three possible opponents would be wonderfully fascinating for different reasons in a short series, right? You would have the prospect of the Reds, who have not won a playoff series since we've been alive, okay? That's amazing. Diamondbacks, who kicked their ass in the postseason not long ago, or the Mets. Think about it. $600 million or whatever combined payroll just in these
more.
Three
way
stupid
more.
Games. Way more. Yeah, well, I guess it is way more combined in these three stupid games at Dodger Stadium.
The, ooh, the Brewers
it's just
are like
delicious.
Caleb Durbin is like on his couch with Joey Ortiz just laughing.
Oh, it's so funny. All right. Anyway, that's the National League. All right, let's talk about something that does not matter for the next 6 weeks, but is definitely going to matter for the rest of our baseball lives. Jake, we
show me your
need
abs
to talk about.
We need to talk about your abs, brother. No idea why this got dropped now. Bizarre timing. Maybe they had to do it before the regular season ended. I'm not sure why it was, released while the games were super hot fire. But we have confirmation. The Rules Committee. Competition Committee, which I think is six owners, four former players, an umpire, and I think my dad? No. And your seventh grade science teacher.
That's important context for who's voting in a micro sense, but also interesting that Zach Gallen said that, so it seems like the player representatives also pulled the player representatives from around the league. So they get 30 answers from all the team's reps. And he said, told the media that 23 teams were in favor from the player's perspective. So that's compelling. I'd say that's an interesting data point to consider as we think about, especially in the context of the other rule changes that we've had that we often look at in viewed through the lens of MLB is just imposing its executive power and Rob Manfred's deciding how baseball is going to be. And of course, some of these have been wildly successful. Some of these are still not very popular. I would say for the most part, these have been good changes that we've had dramatically across the board. But, still how they go about being implemented, people have totally reasonable feelings about how the commissioner is able to implement those.
But let's be clear about something. Rob Manfred does not get 23 teams supporting this measure. If the pitch clock had not generally been seen as a success. Now, I think are more against the pitch clock.
Sure.
They are more players are more anti-pitch clock than fans and like the general consensus, I think. We like it. We think it's a good thing. As a whole, 23 teams being like, this is good, is like a rare ray of sunshine in the thunderstorm of union league interaction. like, I'm not, I don't want to get too optimistic here. Like, this is not going to go well in the CBA negotiations in a couple of next offseason, but this is a good thing. Like, the league could have rammed this through if they wanted, right? They had the votes. There's enough owners on the committee that they can do that. And they didn't need to. And I think that in my mind, that is a positive. Let's talk about what ABS actually will do. I guess we will spend all offseason on that. We'll probably do a whole show just on ABS and the impact we think it'll have. Let's not worry about that right now. We got to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say this. Mets. I'll just reiterate the same points that I've had when we've had conversations about this in the past. Again, the challenge system, this is not full robo ump, so it is that both teams will have the ability to challenge two pitches a game and retain their challenges if they are successful. And the point that I've just continued to make over and over, and I stand by it, is that even though we've seen it in spring training and we've seen it tested, we've seen how it functions, we've seen it in the All-Star game, you know, we did see that this year, we have no idea what this is actually going to do. We don't actually know if this is going to make the good framers extinct, if it's really not going to impact them that much at all because it's not that many pitches. We have no idea how teams are going to weaponize this, strategize around this, how much this is going to change the game. We don't know. It is going to change it. It is going to be interesting. I am excited to learn, but the data points that we have so far, I do not think are at all instructive for how this is actually going to function. And that makes me excited about it because once the teams are actually forced to use this in competition where the games matter and the choices to challenge actually count and who gets to decide, because right now it's easy to joke. Oh yeah, Juan Soto, challenge away. So-and-so, you're never going to get challenged. And we can laugh at all those things now, but some of those things will end up being true. And that is going to be so interesting. And we'll have more data on which umps get challenged the most. And like all this stuff's going to be fascinating. As you said, we can cover that this offseason because it is going to be a major topic now that we know that it is a real thing and not just something we are testing in spring training, which is not real. It's not real baseball. It's not real competition. That is just going to get they were just focusing on the mechanics of it. And we will see what this actually looks like. I'm very excited.
All right, let's take a break. And when we get back, we will deliver the final regular season edition of The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I'm tired, so let's just get into it. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing ugly.
I will start us off with a little moment here in Cleveland. George Valera, rookie outfielder for the Cleveland Guardians, who had a big home run in Cleveland's Wednesday night victory. George Valera was a top prospect, has endured a lot of injuries, as unfortunately many of the Guardians prospects have, but he's made it into the big leagues, and not only has he made the big leagues, he's batting second because they like the quality of his at-bats. They like that he's got some power, and for a Guardians offense that ranks last in almost every category imaginable, any semblance of offensive upside, they will take. George Valera has seized this opportunity. George Valera hits this big home run. Afterwards, he does the on-field interview with dugout reporter Andre Knott, former guest on the pod. Shout out, Andre. And one of the great bits that Andre Knott has running in his career doing this job.
Is
with Jose Ramirez. And I don't know the exact origins of this. But over the years, when Jose hits a big home run and Andre does the interview with him after, Andre will end the interview and say, Jose, what pitch was that you hit out? And Jose will say, you know, bro, home run pitch. And so on Wednesday, George Valera was asked, and I actually don't think Andre meant to do this. I could be wrong. It seemed like Andre was caught off guard by this, but he asked George Valera, who grew up in New York, but has Dominican heritage and obviously like is lockers next to Jose Ramirez. Like Jose's the guy, wow. Right? Yeah. Like, oh my God, I'm teammates with Jose Ramirez. I'm hitting in front of Jose Ramirez. This is the coolest thing ever. He asked him like, hey, well, what pitch is that you hit out? And Valera just smiles and pauses and just goes, home run pitch. It's just so great. So I love it. Shouts out George Valera and Jose Ramirez and Andre Knott. There you go.
Home run pitch. I threw a lot of those in college. My good is somehow related to the Astros. On Saturday night, when the Mariners beat the Astros on the preposterous catch at the end of the game, I believe this was the Victor Robles game with the Jake Myers Toot Bland involved. Earlier in that game, this guy on the Mariners, is this right? Catcher Cal Raleigh hit his 57th home run. That's
got to be wrong.
Okay. You know what? It's actually too low. It's 60 now. He hit his 57th home run to break Ken Griffey Jr.'s Mariners record. There's this little video of bullpen catcher for the Astros, Javier Bracamonte, bringing Cal Raleigh the ball. The ball went into the bullpen. Bracamonte either caught it or retrieved it and gave it back to Cal. Cal gives him a nice little handshake. And, you know, this is a very nice, kind, sweet thing to do. Like, there is a part of this that's like, you'll never believe. You know, it's like one of those memes. It's like mom Facebook core. You'll never believe what this bullpen catcher did. Right.
Yeah.
But it strikes me for two reasons. One is the way that that game ended with Robles making the catch, where the whole team was in shock. We went and looked at the replay, and I think one of the coaches for the Astros just starts walking into the clubhouse like before the play is over because he sees what's happening. And so for Bracamonte to have the kind of the wherewithal to do this, I thought was very impressive. And then the other thing is that he's a catcher. Who understands the impressiveness of Cal Raleigh more than Mr. Javier Bracamonte, who spends his whole life squatting, right? And we make this joke all the time. Catchers are troops. They're baseball's troops.
Mm-hmm. They are.
This was like two warriors from different clans, two, you know, military men from opposing armies meeting on the battlefield during a truce and shaking hands. And so this filled me up with glee.
Also awesome because Javier Bracamonte is like the guy. He's been there longer than everybody else in Houston. He's been there like since 2001. Like he's the guy. So, you know, there might be some other younger bullpen catchers who would like maybe be scared to do this and might think like, oh no, like this isn't my place to like do that. Like Bracamonte runs that place. So he can do whatever he wants. It's obviously a great gesture, which is awesome. All right. My bad this week is very simple. The Cubs were on ESPN this week against the Mets, and Carl Ravitch repeatedly called Michael Bush Matthew Bush. The specifics of this, I don't really care. This is more of just a broad thing. Come on. Can't happen. Can't be doing that. Not only because it's the end of the season and Michael Bush is one of the best players, one of the best hitters on one of the best teams. I am so frustrated when these things happen, because as people that talk into a microphone for a living in front of far fewer people, getting things correct usually just from a pronunciation, but names are important, and basic facts at a time when truth is, you know, under threat. I would like for it to be easy to say the right names of the baseball players, particularly the important ones on the good teams on national TV broadcasts. So this is not a hot take, but truly, like, it bothers me a lot.
So I know how much it bothers you.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've endured being my partner, I've gotten better.
No, I mean,
I'm not,
Jake's
bad
making
with names.
Yeah, well, and you'll make slip ups, but again, it's like the way
calling him Vaughn Grisham for a while.
But this is another thing, important distinction. I take pronunciations very seriously as well. That's different than Matthew versus Michael. I mean, come on. So that's not, those are different mistakes that are less forgivable in my opinion. So
if you had Jordan Schusterman parlaying a Carl Ravitch flub into a defense of the First Amendment on your Barbacast bingo card,
I don't know
turn
what
that
it is,
in.
But it's something.
My bad this week is a little different. This happened like 20 minutes ago. Mariners beating up on the Rockies, runners on first and third, two outs. Cal Raleigh's up. He has 60 home runs this year. How about that? Everyone is on their feet to watch 61. And Randy Arozarena steals second base with two outs for basically no reason, right? the reason that Randy did this is to pad his stats for arbitration so that he can make more money, which, you know, we live in capitalist America, like go off king or whatever. This is bad because then they walked Cal Raleigh intentionally. This is bad on the Rockies for doing that. Any other team, I would be like, you're trying to win the ball game. That's fine. The yeah. Rock, like for me, it's like you won 12 games this year. Like Skip Schumacher had a chance to do this with Ohtani in the Ohtani game. Remember this?
True. That's true. I'm totally with you on that. That's a great comp. But in this case, I mean, this is on Randy. I'm sorry. Like,
it's Randy's fault.
Yeah, like this is. I am less peeved by how the. To me, I actually think the Rockies are like, oh, like that's hilarious. Yeah, we're walking him now. like that's. I actually think in this case, it's harder for me to be as mad at them for it. But anyway, it does look like Cal will get one more plate appearance here in the bottom of the eighth.
Randy owes Cal like. There. I don't know what rich guys do, but Randy owes Cal like a bottle of, you know,
I mean,
nice lotion or something,
you know,
whatever they do.
I think he'll be. It is a plate appearance that, again, the home run probability is going to be higher in that spot than it is in probably the rest of the season. So that is a disappointing outcome.
But. You know what I want Randy to do? I actually want them to make him run a lap. That'd be the funniest punishment. Just make him run a lap after the game.
I will just say, I'm just going to sneak this in here. I have been thinking about Randy a lot because he's actually been pretty terrible for like the last week and a half. And I'm remembering that like Randy Rosarena in October is kind of a big deal.
Like, oh, yeah.
That's a cool thing that is also on the Mariners, just to keep in mind. So that'll be cool. Anyway, all right. My ugly this week is an interaction between just two dudes in Toronto, Canada. Last offseason, when many teams were chasing Roki Sasaki and believed that they needed to have as much international bonus money as possible to offer to Roki Sasaki, the Toronto Blue Jays were one of those teams, and they made a trade with the Cleveland Guardians, and they said, we will take Miles Straw's bizarrely large contract that he signed, extension, if you give us some international bonus money that we can offer to Roki Sasaki. And the Guardians were like, sure, we ain't using this international money and we do not want to pay Miles Straw. So Miles Straw, Roki Sasaki, that's already a funny enough thing to keep in mind. But the Blue Jays still had this money that they wanted to give Roki that they couldn't because Roki signed with the Dodgers. And so fast right. forward a few months and they're like, okay, wait a minute. There's this Korean pitcher, Seo Jun Moon, 18-year-old, very talented. Blue Jays have never signed a Korean amateur at the time. We know they had Hyunjin Ryu, which was very cool.
Yeah.
But they're like, all right, cool. We'll sign this talented 18-year-old Korean pitcher. And he was in Toronto to be introduced. And he snapped a picture with Miles Straw. And Miles Straw gave this wonderful quote, which is, I like to keep up with the prospects, especially to see where my trade money went. So he knows. He's like, ah, this is something that was in the works. They had to spend this somewhere. They're paying me. And so this is part of it is like they are paying Miles Straw probably more than what he's worth. But they also had this money that they didn't get Roki Sasaki with. And now at the very least, this is the end of the trade. They got Miles Straw and not Roki Sasaki. For, you know, Miles Straw and this Korean pitcher. So if he goes on to have a better career than Roki Sasaki, this will be a very funny moment in time. And Miles Straw just giving this young Korean pitcher a handshake is very, very ugly.
Apparently, I saw that he asked for the picture, that like Straw wanted to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Great it. Sense of humor.
Good stuff.
My ugly is very simple. The Baltimore Orioles last week tied the record for the most players used in a single season.
Mm.
70.
That's too many. That's too many 70, players, Jake.
70 players is so many players, dude.
That is not. So here's the thing. You know, spring training, you know, you got your big hype meeting. David Rubenstein's in
we're
there talking
need
about
it.
We're going to win
room.
The World Series. We're going to need everyone in this room. The Orioles needed so many more people than were in that room. And that's not a good thing, but it is
too many people. They tied the record set by last year's Miami Marlins team. teams are using more people than ever. The difference, however, is that the Orioles were trying to win the World Series this year, and the 2024 Marlins were not trying to win the World Series last year, and this is bad. Jordan Schusterman, if I were to give you a Sporkle quiz of the 2025 Orioles.
Oh, boy. Well, how I have many the page up 70? Now, but if I try this like in a week or something, I think I could
get to 50?
50, yeah, are you, I think. 60.
You think you're getting Carson Ragsdale?
I do think Grant I'm getting Wolfram? Carson Ragsdale because he's a 2020 draft guy. And when he debuted, I didn't know how he ended up on the Orioles. But
Know who broke the record? The man who
no, who was the who, scale? Who did it?
Jose Espada.
That is not a person I'm familiar with.
And that's our show.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that bit of ugla. I guess the Orioles could squeeze in a 71st this weekend against the Yankees.
Make it happen.
Maybe there's one more. All right, Jake, I know there was one more thing we wanted to address before we get out of here and head to the weekend.
Yeah. So we spent both of the last two episodes discussing Clayton Kershaw. We spent a lot of time on Clayton Kershaw discussing him, his retirement, his legacy. And we received an email and a couple tweets from some people who felt like we did not do a good enough job addressing kind of the entirety of Kershaw's legacy as it pertains to the way that he has treated the LGBT community throughout his career. And that feedback is correct, 100%. We fell short of that. We kind of pride ourselves on this show for making sure that it's a place where all types of baseball fans feel comfortable. And we failed. Being able to hold the various parts of a baseball player, who they are as a person and who they are as a player, at the same time is difficult at times, and it is also important. And I think it can be uncomfortable, and it is something that I think that we do not shy away from on this show. And we, more me, because you are off on Friday, shied away from it in this instance. And I think that Kershaw's legacy specifically cannot be told in its entirety without, you know, referencing his conduct during the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence in 2023. And he has chosen to make this a part of his story in a way that other players have not. And I think that his actions have made the baseball community a less welcoming place for queer people. And I think that that is a bad thing. And I also think it is a bad thing that we failed to address that properly. And so one thing that we do, you know, that matters to us is like this show is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. When you folks email us and say, hey, you guys didn't do good enough, like, we take that feedback seriously, and we appreciate people, you know, keeping us honest, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that, right, especially hearing from people who have listened to us for a long time, we can't pretend to understand. You know, we're fortunate enough to have a microphone and have a platform, but we can't necessarily speak for people. But also, we have that responsibility to acknowledge and try and be as inclusive and understanding as possible, and recognize when the players who have the platforms we believe are falling short of what we would hope at this point in history. So I think that, and as like, you mentioned, we appreciate that feedback and welcome it always, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, because we're always just trying to figure it out too.
And it sucks. Like, it would be much easier if like these were all great people making the world a better place.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the case.
Yep.
But it is our job to hold, as we say often on this show, Jordan, multiple things can be true at the same time. Email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to you, Jordan Schusterman, for joining me. Enjoy your travel this weekend. I know you have a wedding. Don't point at people. You're pointing at me.
What's happening on Monday? This ain't no regular podcast. We are going live. On Monday morning, look out for the details on our socials over the weekend to preview the postseason, which will be beginning on Tuesday. And we will appreciate that Monday that there will not be any games, hopefully, right? Why would there be any games? Unlike last year, which was an absolute mess. We will take that Monday to preview.
To breathe.
Postseason. We will have it live everywhere. Live on Twitter, live on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. The whole
TikTok
shebang. Oh, yeah. Live. Dude, come on. It's 2025. We're looking forward to that. So join us. Thank you for supporting us over the course of this regular season. Holy crap.
We're just
what
over?
A year it's been. That's wild, right? Oh, my gosh. We did another year. And this has been an awesome season with Yahoo, and we are so excited to keep it rolling. So we'll talk to you all on Monday. Everyone have a good weekend, and we'll see who these 12 teams are. We will see.